Okay, thank you for the introduction. I will introduce several things. And now, as Sanjeev said, we started with this, but now, as you know, this workshop in the translation and semantics part is quite a lot about the abstract meaning representation, which was developed recently by Kevin and Martha and others. And I would like to both introduce what we have been doing and what representation we have been using for what we call meaning, and then show some relations between our representation and the AMRs, and also at the end show whether the AMRs mainly are a more general representation for more languages to compare. So I will show some comparison between Czech and English, which we actually have written as a paper for calling, and I will show some of the contents here. So before I get to that, I would like to introduce tree banks in general, just a little bit, for those who are maybe from the speech area, never seen tree banks, and also show the styles that people use for tree banking. And then I will talk about our style, which is more complex than just the meaning annotation, because of course we use other layers for representing syntax and morphology and so on. And then, but I will talk most about the technogrammatic representation anyway, in our tree banks. And then I will show the relation to AMRs and also the differences between Czech and English based on AMRs. So as I guess even, you know, many people know the Penn tree bank, right? So I don't have to talk about that much. The main feature of the Penn tree bank is simply follows the context-free grammar formalism, and of course that's something which we know how it behaves, and it's a very popular thing for parsing, and it was used in computer science and elsewhere. So we know all that. There are many other tree banks which follow the same scheme, including the labeling scheme and including the fact that this is a phrase-based tree bank. But as you probably also know, recently people got interested in dependency tree banks, and this is just a different style for presenting syntax, which is you know, more popular in some other parts of the world, like here. So what we wanted to do, have a direct annotation, direct manual annotation of syntax in the dependency style to essentially get good training data for parsing. But on top of that, we have also used the sort of dependency mechanism for okay, make it more general and try to annotate meaning on top of those trees. So the this is just a standard Penn tree bank tree, maybe drawn with you know, angle lines instead of other edges, but this is it. The tree bank was published quite well. It's 20 years last time, right, when we celebrated LDC's 20 years. It's not only text, but it also applies to spoken data and applies to all kinds of texts. But this is kind of the standard annotation. Of course, the Penn tree bank was extended in various ways and for various languages in various ways. And I think the most known extensions are adding probank sort of over the Penn tree bank, which is also a way of adding semantics. So it adds breaked argument relations. It adds links to frame files of the probank and a similar thing for nonbank. But of course, there were other additions to the Penn tree bank, like more detailed noun phrases, name entity annotation, and other things. So it's not just the old style, just the context-free grammar with labels, but it's many things actually added in the meantime. Now, in our case, we started with dependencies, but in fact, right from the beginning, the annotation was designed with the meaning representation in view. So what we started with was a scheme which would add several layers of annotation in a relatively consistent manner from bottom up. And as I said, it's dependency-based syntax. But then, for the meaning part, we have also added some additional things, and some of them are actually not annotated on the over the pen tree bank. So for example, the information structure, I will show just a little bit about that. We added coreference, but also textual coreference. We added multi-word entities, and we also now adding discourse relations. I don't have a slide for that. But that's all annotated at or above the technogrammatical layer. Now, of course, we started with Czech, but now we have a Czech English tree bank as well, so the English is also annotated using this style, and we also did some sample for Arabic, and then, of course, students work on other languages as well. So here are the four basic layers of annotation. So, of course, we start with just the words, and I think this is the picture you have seen at the day one when Andrzej was showing his slides. So this is our standard picture. So we have the words, we have the morphological annotation, we have the dependency syntax, and then we have the textogrammatical representation. Now, I will show more details later, but please note that all the layers are interlinked by these dashed arrows, and this is one of the features which we also have built in from the very beginning, because even though those links do not really represent much in terms of meaning or syntax, but they are very important for learning from this tree bank. So if you want to go from morphology to syntax, of course you want to know which word corresponds to which node in the syntactic tree. And also when you have the meaning representation, you want to know which node comes from which nodes on the syntax layer. So this is something, if you have been listening, I think yesterday, to the generation talk from AMRs. So there is a step in doing the alignment between the nodes in the AMRs and the words. Now, in this data, this is already done manually, so you don't have to go through this, and hopefully it will decrease the errors by not having to do the alignment automatically. So what are the layers? Now, morphology, normally in tree banks and even dependency tree banks, morphology is just a part of speech tag, which is attached to the nodes. But in our case, because it's more complex, we just wanted to have a separate layer, which also allowed some other things to do, such as lemmatization. So we can we take the word form, and we also have systematically including the base forms or the lemmas for those words, which is, of course, good for translation or other tasks when you really want to have dilemmas. So this is something which is not in the pen tree bank, even though many people have done it, you know, as on top of that. So the power of speech tag does not contain only the power of speech. It contains all the morphological information which is relevant, and in Czech, of course, it's quite rich. For other languages, it's less or more rich. Of course, for Arabic, we have 40 positions for the various parts of the segments of the word. For English, we have just 4, I think. So that's easy thing. Just edit the morphological tags and the lemmas. Now for the surface syntax, which we called analytical, even though that's just for the lack of agreement what syntax means, and we were asked not to use the word syntax because, you know, syntacticians would probably not like it. Well, anyway, it's a syntax. So this is a dependency tree. This is a dependency tree of the sentence this is in English. And in fact, the dependency annotation is relatively simple because you only add two things. For each word, you have to say what its head is, or governor node, right? So that's just one attribute for each node. And the other one is the function label. Now, the function labels are here attached to the node, but in fact, they name the edge between the two things. So it's just the name of the dependency relation. In fact, we have we are using a relatively coarse-grained scheme, just not to fight for slight differences. So this is essentially the basic set of labels. It's only 8 labels. So for example, adverbials are not have no detailed classification into whether it's a temporal or local or whatever. And that's because we knew we will have have this meaning level as well, where we planned to do it, and that's what we did. So on the surface syntax, it's a very simple labeling, and actually most of the labels are just technical labels denoting what the preposition is and which type of conjunction we have used, punctuation, all this stuff, which is not really syntax in the proper sense. One thing which is always difficult, and even though we do allow non-projective constructions on the dependency trees, which is something you cannot really do natively in phrase-based grammars, but we still have a problem with that. That's ellipses. So if you have a node, which I mean, if you would like to have a node which was not, which does not correspond to any word on the surface, so if that node is a leaf, we don't do anything. We just leave it out, right? It's not there. But there are cases where there are nodes sort of missing in the middle of the tree, and we had to do something with that. So we have introduced special labeling for that. So here is just one, you know, very simple example, very simple sentence with a subject and object. The subject is the baker, the predicate is bake or bakes, and then Rawls is the object. So this is just, you know, for those who have not seen that before, simple sentence. Now, of course, I'm not showing the morphological annotation, so this would be actually lemmatized to the infinitive of bake. Well, this is already in the form, and this the plural will be removed, and we will get the singular here as well, plus all the morphological information about case and so on. So this is the syntactic dependency tree of this simple sentence. And since I talked about ellipses, this is one of the actually most frequent labors. You won't believe it, even on textual data. This internal ellipsis is very frequent. And in this case, and it typically happens when you have a coordinated sentence where something is left out on the second or third terms in the coordination, and if that something which is left out is a verb or something which actually has dependence in the sentence, we have to do something about it. And so we have introduced this special label which simply says, okay, I should have been dependent of something which is missing, but you know, just technically I'm attached to something else. So just not to confuse any learning mechanism, there is special labeling on that. And that's just the price for having a continuous tree. Of course, we could just leave it out as a forest, but that would be, you know, we would have almost every sentence discontinuous. So enough for surface syntax. I promise to talk more about meaning. So now I will talk about the technogrammatical annotation, which is the third layer. So we had the morphology as the first layer, surface syntax as the second layer, and then we have the technogrammatical layer. Now the yes.
Go back to the previous example.
Uh-huh.
So I guess in the surface syntax, you're going to leave it like this.
Uh-huh.
But at some point, you'll have to reintroduce the missing
the verb. Yes. Yes. Yes, yes, because that's one of the, I think the first feature which is different between the technogrammatical annotation and the surface annotation, that is, as opposed to the surface syntax, now we are allowed to remove nodes and add nodes. That's something which what we didn't do at the surface syntax. So everything that was there, including punctuation, abbreviated things, compounds, whatever, was left as it is. So we actually have one-to-one correspondence between the morphological units and the nodes in the surface tree. But then for the technogrammatical, this is no longer true. There can be additions and deletions and whatever.
So I guess the question I have is the labels on Pavel and I guess the Spatnie.
Yes.
They don't tell you that one is the subject, the other is the subject.
No. At the surface syntax layer, you don't know.
I see.
Yeah.
I mean, we don't have labels which said that this is a subject.
We could, but we didn't do it because actually, in I would say half of the cases of ellipses, yeah, it's not clear as here what actually the nodes are, what the labels should be. I mean, here it's sort of clear that this would be a subject.
And, construction.
Yeah, but in many cases there is some, you know, parenthetical expression where it's not clear what it is, and then sometimes it can be solved later at the technogrammatical layer, and sometimes there is some mechanism how to do it in other cases. Okay, so so once again, this is like the biggest, there was the biggest decision that when we split this out, that for the surface syntax, we can keep the words as they were with no deletions, no additions, but on the technogrammatical layer, we have the freedom to do anything. So we did, right? So there are rules, the annotation guidelines, which tell you when things should be added and when they should be deleted and so on. But even then, the technogrammatical layer, it's not just a homogeneous annotation. I mean, it is from the technical point of view, but we have divided it into like four areas of annotation, even though this is still on one like physical file, but we can distinguish between these four. So first, we do the structure, meaning that we delete nodes, add edges, and now we label them not by syntactic function, but by the semantic relations. And now we don't only have 8, but we have almost 60 relations, which are, you know, detailed enough to be useful for telling what the semantics is. The kind of the next area is the information structure, and I will show just two examples of that. Then we have coreference, again as a separate area, because of course you can train annotators for coreference, you know, quite easily as opposed to the meaning representation. And then we have some additional information such as plurals and so on. I will show more details about that as well, which should be added at the end to this annotation to just preserve every possible you know, change in meaning. So, in fact, the total is like, you know, that many attributes. In fact, some of them are technical, so the really used one are about 20, which tells something about the meaning of the sentence. So now let me go to the first area, which is the dependency structure. And I thought that the best way to look at it is to show the surface syntax tree and the corresponding technogrammatical tree and show the differences, right? So the first difference you can tell, right, there is less nodes. So in general, even though we are allowed and we defined in the guidelines that there will be nodes added and nodes deleted, most of the changes are deletions. So this is very similar to AMRs where you know, all the prepositions are gone, conjunctions and so on. I will show more examples about that. So that's one difference. And then, of course, the structure will be also somewhat different. It's not that just, you know, removing nodes. So in this case, this is relatively simple. We have a verb with two auxiliaries. These two auxiliaries will be collapsed into a single node. But using the semantic attributes, the tense and other things will be preserved, or modalities, or whatever we know about, you know, from those auxiliaries. And then of course the word will be lemmatized, and a link will be done that's similar to ProBank, will be done to the appropriate frame file or our dictionary for verbs. So this is one basic operation. The other one is that the syntactic labels will be changed to the semantic labels, and this is not just one-to-one because, you know, first we have only a few syntactic labels, but also this might change. So for example, this is a subject, but because it's a passive sentence, this essentially says this is a deep object. Now we have different labels than ProBank, but essentially actor means argument zero. Okay, I'm simplifying, but actor means argument zero, and patient means the subject, so something like argument one. So that's another thing. Then all these aux labels, like prepositions, conjunctions, graphical symbols, parentheses, and so on, they will be just deleted. But of course, again, it doesn't mean that the meaning will be lost. Whenever there is a meaning associated with that, like with most prepositions, the meaning will be somehow preserved. Now, in this case, this is not really necessary because influence will be a patient of influence will always have this preposition. So this preposition can be just deleted. And we know from the valency dictionary that influence has this preposition for a patient. So this information can be you know, deleted from the tree because it can be retrieved from the information from the frame files. So that's, this is an example of a node which is being added. And this is most of the nodes, which are added are nodes for obligatory verb arguments which were not seen on the surface. Now, this is, it might seem, you know, strange or superfluous, but we need them for doing, for example, coreference. So very often in Czech, you can leave out subjects or pronouns in general, but then when you do coreference, you would lose a node, you know, for doing like coreference chains or things like that. So it's a half technical issue and half like theoretical issue that we want to have all these arguments in so that we know we should do something with them. We know they are somehow present in the meaning at least, and then that we should add them in. So in this case, it's just a general actor, you know, underestimated by whom, you know, by the financial people, whoever. But there was someone who was influenced by that. And finally, there might be some things which, from the semantic point of view, should have been two nodes or two subtrees, separate subtrees, but for some reason in the syntax, they will only represent it once. So one of these examples was this ellipsis example with the verb. You know, I have this example because we want to show that Eastern and Central Europe are not exactly the same thing, and there is no such thing as Central and Eastern Europe. I mean, there is Central Europe, there is Eastern Europe. But you know, syntactically, you can, of course, use it as the coordination just on the adjective. So similarly, you know, I bought white and red wine. I mean, there is no such thing as a red and white. I mean, even if the wine is pink, it's not that you mix them together, right? So, or red and white flag, right? You can have red and white flags, but also there are flags like Poland, Indonesia, I don't know, which are red and white at the same time. So this helps to distinguish kind of indirectly what it is. And this is definitely important when we go to AMRs, where there will be some, you know, definition of that thing, which might be in Wikipedia, DBpedia, whatever. But we want to make this link, and there definitely will be a different entry for white wine and red wine, or different entry for Poland and Indonesia. So that's why we do this. So these are just the very basic differences or very basic operations which the annotator has to do in order to create a correct dactylogrammatical tree. So here is just little more details about that. For the verb arguments, we use five. So there will be something like argument 0, 1, 2, 3, 4. The first two are simply the first and second argument, and these three have some semantics on them, even though sometimes it's not quite clear. They are simply the up to five arguments for verbs. And then we have everything else, which of course can modify verbs, nouns, you know, often everything can modify anything, almost. And these are things like location, direction, several different time modifiers, you know, when it happened, before when it happened, after when you have, how long it took. RSTR is the like general attribute modifier. So in AMRs, this is the mod thing. We have benefactor, attitude, accompaniment, intention, manner, which is kind of, you know, almost like mod. It's a very general but adverbial attribute. Material, appurtenance, ID, phrases, and so on. So it's about 60 of them, which that's what we distinguish. This does not give you the complete semantics of the relations, of course, but it's kind of the basic level. And then, of course, we have special markup for things like coordination renotizers and things which are not really relations between two entities in the sentence, but which are necessary for describing the structure of the sentence. Obviously, you need to know what was coordinated with what. So here are just a few more examples. So this is more complicated verb form, analytical verb form, than the one I had on the picture. But this all will be also collapsed to a single predicate. But there will be more additional attributes. So we will know that the modality is to allow to do something. It's a conditional, and of course the tense should be added as well. Now, passive constructions, similar to PROBANK, we kind of solve in the sense that we use just one style of annotation for both the active constructions and passive constructions, because we think, you know, semantically they are the same. Of course, if we correctly label the arguments, but passivization is not the only normalization that we do. There are five more, I think, like diathetical constructions, which we simply represent the same way on the tectogrammatical layer. So, for example, Czech has, from German, Czech doesn't have perfect tense, but borrowing from German, we use the literal translation of haben or to have for representing things which are like perfect, you know, it should be perfect tense, because that's kind of the easiest way to do. So we often say, you know, I have finished something, because, you know, that's the obvious case where you want to say that, and that would be sort of difficult to describe in Czech because we don't have this tense naturally, but I can say, you know, mám hotovo, which means I have finished. So this is again normalized, so you don't see from the tectogrammatical tree exactly which way it was said. Now, the what was objects are, of course, converted to verb arguments. So this would be arg 0, arg 2, arg 1, and that's kind of the obvious change. Again, on the surface layer, we don't distinguish whether it's a first object or second object. Again, we just keep it as an object, but that gets relabeled when we get to the tectogrammatical layer. This is another example that there was, for example, there was no subject on the surface, so we have to add this node. And if we have an embedded sentence, like a description of the house, that's simply left as it is, and the verb gets, predicate gets linked to the dictionary as usual. And this is actually the thing you asked about. So this is what we have seen with the ellipsis, and this node will be added, and simply all the labels will be put in. And of course, we do keep the information that this node was like regenerated. So first of all, there will be links to the same word on the surface. So that's one. But there is a specific attribute as well. So there will be no right away which nodes have been added by you know on this layer, which originally were not on the surface syntax. Now this is a little bit tricky, because sometimes the syntax works in such a way that you only want to copy some things. Not the whole, you know, certainly not the morphology, because, you know, it can be used again, and suddenly it's in present tense, or suddenly it's in singular as opposed to plural. But certainly the lemma and some of the other things you do want to copy. We don't have a mechanism to really distinguish which of those should be copied, but we can simply copy them and change them. So this is all about kind of the basic content of the tectogrammatical annotation, and I will show the other three just briefly. So information structure is something which we actually have no tool to do it, but it's annotated in the data, and this is to distinguish a difference which for example in English is very hard to see, and that's the difference between topic and focus. So topic is something that sort of is known from the context or was said before. I mean, I don't want to go into details. I mean, people disagree how exactly this should be called. Some people call it ream and theme, some people call it topic and focus, some people call it differently. But in any case, what you want to say is whether, you know, you talk about Baker and what he does, or whether you talk about roles and who begs them. And this is something which in Czech can be very often represented by word order. So you put first the words which sort of are related to the previous discourse, and then you say something new about it. Right? In English, this is hard to do in writing, but of course you can use intonation in speech to do this. Right? So if someone asks you what does Baker do? So we can say, yes, Baker bakes rolls, for example, right? But if someone asks you, you know, who bakes rolls? And if you say Baker bakes rolls, that sounds strange, right? You have to say Baker bakes rolls. That's the answer. Baker is the answer, and you talk about rolls because that was part of the question. So what we do, we use this little TNF where we say, you know, what is topic and what is focus, and just, you know, annotate it in the data. coreference, and that's well known. We sort of distinguish between grammatical coreference, which is sort of easy to find out from the syntax. So things like, you know, which, who, Peter, Paul, who, that's an easy to link, and you can almost write the deterministic rules for saying, you know, where this pronoun should be linked to. But there is the more difficult one, which we call textual coreference, where in the sentence, essentially the two, he, the pronouns he, could refer to anyone. You can imagine that these were three different people. You know, someone cheating and someone writing the thesis for someone else, and so on. Of course, you know, if from the context it's clear it's the same person, we simply do the coreference link. So this is how the data is annotated for all pronouns, and now we are working actually on bridging anaphora as well. And then we have the fourth area, which is simply all this sort of boring stuff which has to be there, gender, if it's necessary to annotate, the semantic number, tense, modalities of sentence, modalities of the verbs, negation and other things which simply have to be annotated. Here is a very, very brief description. For example, if we have when, we still have to annotate whether it was before or after. If you have point in time, of course the sentence could have talked about things which happened before the time, which happened after. And that, we don't have a specific functors for that, but we have attributes which can do that. Location, same thing, like was it above, below? So here is where prepositions play a role, and of course if we delete the prepositions, we have to keep it, you know, in some other way. Some of those things can have just plus or minus, because you can do something with someone or without someone. And similarly, it could be good for someone or bad for someone. And this is like additional attribute there. And then all these things I talked about. So this is an example. I call it a fully annotated sentence, but in fact, not everything is really in the printed here. For example, the edit notes are visualized as squares, so that we don't really have to have a lot of text here. But essentially, this contains all the information. These additional arrows are the coreference links of different types. And we do these links also for other types, not only textual and grammatical coreference, but also for complements and other things where there is some relation to some other node. So now, of course, this is, I heard that some people call this sort of cheating, so that we can keep the thing as a tree and then have, you know, specific type of links to, you know, make these links. So I said, okay, yeah. You know, I mean, of course it's a graph. And of course AMR makes this very, very clear that things are just a general graph. On the other hand, it's sort of nice to have this basic structure as a tree and know exactly what type of links there are, because this, not all links are equal. There are also other types of links, like coordination links, which are also sort of a different type of links, relations, which we also want to know exactly which type it is. So this is all explicitly in here.
Sorry, I got you. What's the difference between there is a link which is dashed and the other one which is not dashed? In the blue and the brown.
Actually, this is this node is also kind of added to the tree because it's a square, and this is control. So if you have a construction where there is a verb and an infinitive, and the infinitive copies some of the arguments of the verb, we simply mark it as a different type of coreference, because this is also sort of grammatical coreference, but a different type than when you say Peter who went, so that who Peter is simply a different type of coreference. And this is the usual textual one, like, you know, that someone was this, well, this is not someone, but something, like the boundaries. So the boundaries is like this, no, the contours is the same thing here. Other questions? Okay. One thing I mentioned just briefly, we do the same thing as the PropEng does, that for each verb, and actually ProBank does it also for nouns. For each verb in the data, we have a link to a dictionary which we call a valency dictionary, but that's something like the frame files, where we actually distinguish the sense of the verb, because each sense of the verb could have a different argument structure and different surface realization. So that's what we did also manually. So there is this lexicon, and the links go from the text to the lexicon. This also allows to not to annotate things which can be extracted from the lexicon, like preposition realizations and so on. So for example, for leaf, ProBank has two different meanings of leaf. To leave, like give something for someone somewhere, that would be the first sense, and this would be just leave some place and go somewhere else. So in Czech, this is very different. Actually, there are two different verbs for that. So but of course in Czech we have homonymous verbs as well. Every sense usually very strongly correlates with the surface form. So even if we have two senses of the same verb with two arguments, very often, especially the second argument, the patient has a different realization. Sometimes it's just a direct case like accusative, and the other one would have some prepositional phrase, which is good because then from the text we can distinguish. But of course, there are also cases where they do not differ on the surface. So here is an example for the verb to lay down. Literally, the most common translation would be lay down, which is like the first sense, but there are more senses like that: resign, win, and ask. And these two actually have the same realization, even though they have clearly different sense. This one is actually idiom, to lay down someone on his back means to win over someone. So it's just an idiom. And in this case, it's three arguments. So it's like ask a question. And that's that has a different structure, and there are more actually. So now, since we have discussed that, the speech people can wake up. So I will do a little bit of explanation how we treat spoken data. Now, if you have worked with the Penn Tree Bank, with the switchboard part. There is a scheme for annotation of spoken data in the Penn Tree Bank style. But we have been trying to do the same thing for the dependency syntax, and we discovered that that the guidelines would like grow twice as much, and because we would have to create lots of conventions how to deal with all these kinds of disfluencies, which you can see in a standard transcript. And we tried to do that, but it was almost impossible. We thought that annotators will do it wrong because it will be too complicated. Everyone will mark the same thing in different ways and so on. So what we did instead, we tried to use this idea, which is actually not ours, but Fred's again, to use what we call speech reconstruction, meaning that we first take the transcript and we make it grammatical. So we can imagine that if you are a reporter and you write for a journal, you make an interview and you record the interview, and you only print the interview if you really want to damage the person you made the interview with, because that's how it usually works. It would be ungrammatical, false, all this stuff. It's almost unreadable very often. There are only very few people who can talk at informal meetings, grammatically. So we decided to do kind of the same process that these people have to do with the transcript or with the recording, in order to make it appear at least readable and sort of grammatical. And then, of course, once you have it grammatical, then you can do the annotation by using just the standard rules. So this is a very simple example. This is far from being a really bad example. It has this, I think, in the middle. So if you do disfluency removal only, you probably would remove it. But you will also lose a little bit of information because, this was like an uncertainty of the person who was saying that. So what you want to do instead is just to rearrange it to something which you would normally expect in print. So that's the whole principle. Now, of course, this is not... it's sort of laborious to do. So we have done an editing tool for doing this, And of course, the one thing you have to do as well is, if you want to get grammatical sentences, you have to do resegmentation. I mean, the transcript, whether it's done manually or automatically, it typically does not really end on what you want to have as sentence boundaries. So one of the things the tool allowed was say, okay, here is, you know, please split it here, this is a different sentence. And then, of course, do things like removing things and adding things and so on to the reconstructed layer of the annotation. So here is the ont sentence where you simply want to move, I mean, in this case at the beginning, so you take the I think and you can move it here. And you can do any editing operation you want, like when you are editing interviews. So you can even change the words. Sometimes people forget which verb they said at the beginning and they use a different case. This is very often in Czech when you know the cases depend on the verb. And if you forget about the verb and you suddenly think about some synonym which has a different surface case required, then you simply say the other case. So we can also change that. So that's another example. We can insert words, of course. Very often people don't use words. This doesn't mean we are guessing, you know, what they wanted to say, but if it's clear grammatically what should be added, then it's added. So that's how we treat spoken data. We have samples of the tree banking on those data. It's still going on. You know, it's slow because we don't have extra money for that, but we will eventually have this on the technogrammatical layer. And what we think it's important is that all these links will be preserved too. So if we are able to write the appropriate user interface, you will be able to click on a node in the technogrammatical tree and it will play back everything, you know, the whole subtree which was realized on the surface by the person who was talking. So you should be able to listen even to discontinuous segments of the spoken text. And of course, the links will allow to train things to say, you know, which should be removed, which should not be. Actually, we did some experiments, but we are actually not working on it. We first finishing the data. Any questions? So you can actually download it for both Czech and English, but the trees are still not quite there. It's just a reconstructed text. Okay, so now the last part is I promised to show something about the you know, how these meaning representations actually relate between languages. You know, is it better than the surface syntax for doing it? Now, when you look at the surface syntax, obviously the trees are different. I don't even have a picture of that, but that's quite clear. I mean, auxiliaries are used differently across languages. Prepositions are used differently. Sometimes they are used, sometimes they are not. Imagine agglutinative languages like Hungarian, which glue everything together, and of course the syntactic tree would be very different and so on. So the idea of the technogrammatical representation, you know, on top of kind of representing the meaning, was that it might be simpler to use for tasks like machine translation or as an intermediate structure for question answering or simply understanding what a text is about. And of course, the purpose of AMR is the same, except that AMR wants to be even more general than the technogrammatical representation. So in this case, these are the technogrammatical representations of the same sentence in Czech and English. And even if you don't see exactly what the attributes are, you see that the trees are quite different, are still different, even though we have done some tests that, for example, for translation, for 90% of the sentences, you could probably get away with the same representation for both languages. Even though it won't be, you know, the best translation stylistically, you can get away with that. But in naturally occurring translations, this is very often the case. They are even structurally different. So now, you know, these are the things which are different. So in fact, in Czech is translated as in reality, which is which behaves differently in syntax. We could probably put it at the beginning of the sentence, but it's not that usual. Now, all by itself, obviously, it says it's half idiom. So in Czech, it was translated as the only, right? So again, this is just one node as opposed to two nodes as annotated here, and that was the translation. So going to AMRs, we hope it could you know, solve some of those inconsistencies between the two representations. So this is an AMR corresponding to the same sentence as I showed. This is the lexicographical tree, and this is the AMR. We have done this for, you know, small amount of sentences, 100 sentences in Czech and English, actually for Chinese as well, but I can't say much about Chinese, but I will say something about the differences between Czech and English. If you look at these two trees, it's a different sentence or different segment of a sentence, but if you disregard this red part, the trees are identical, at least structurally identical. There are some differences in labeling, but they are really, you know, they are almost the same. They won't be at the lexicographical layer, and of course they won't be at the dependency syntax layer. These two things are just a difference between, in English you say in aggregate, and in Czech you have to say from the global view. So it's more like a multi-word expression thing where, you know, you have a we have an expression which simply consists of two words, and in the other language it's just one word. Here is another example which is slightly more difficult. And so the part of the sentence which is destinations at both ends, this would be really hard to say in Czech literally, because, you know, destination is usually translated as cíl for those who know Czech. And but if you say that, it doesn't really mean the same thing as what the destination meant in the sentence. So it was sort of explained in the Czech translation as a place where people usually go, because I think that's what the English sentence wanted to say. And even for the translation, this was something you really had to do. So in fact, you have kind of an additional part of the tree, you know, correctly annotated by the AMR rules, but they somehow have to be guessed, because, you know, of course destinations will sometimes be translated like this, but of course if destinations have attributes on the English side, they will probably just be translated as a single word, like a place or goal. So this is something which is definitely a difference. Otherwise, again, the sentences are the same. Here are two more examples. One is, in English, this was a beginning of a sentence. So this is like a vocative, you know, Virginia centrist, dear Virginia centrist. The dear was not there. If you say this in Czech, no one would understand what a centrist is. Even if you say not Virginia, but if you say Prague, no one will know what centrist is. You have to sort of explain it. So in Czech, we have to say that actually this was about voting. It was about elections. So instead of just using centrist, we had to say, you know, a centrist voter. And then people would understand what central or centrist means. Again, this is sort of a multi-word expression problem, except that this is a word which has dependence. So you have to know where to put this word, whether you know, Virginia should go to here or should go to here. I don't know. You know, and also the translation added dear, because again, addressing people in Czech is not, unless you use first names or something, you have to say something like Mr. or Professor or, you know, or so in this case we simply said, you know, dear Virginia centrist. This is another example where auditor for was, and this is not a translation problem, but this is an annotation problem, where in the English AMR it was converted to the verb audit and was say person who audits. But in Czech we actually don't have such verb. I mean, we can stretch it a little bit and say, you know, to audit. I mean, there's a way how to take any English verb and convert it sort of to Czech by adding a suffix, but it's not really used frequently. So the annotators just left auditor as a term which would be grounded somehow as such, not just converted to the events. And again, there are many such cases, and I don't know, if we have a missing verb, it's very hard to force the annotators to invent it and put it in. So here are some, these are just, some examples, but, and we actually had these examples in the ELREC paper, which you might know, where Chinese was also included, but we did this comparison on the, 100 sentences of Czech and English, which had about 1,500 words and about 1,200 AMR notes in the annotation, and these are the statistics. So 29% of the sentences were structurally the same. Only 4 or 6 of them had also the same labeling, but labeling is a different story. I mean, we can hope that we can learn the labeling, from the data, the changes of the labeling. What is a subgraph is sort of difficult to say, but we considered a subgraph something which has kind of a one consistent meaning. So sometimes there are more nodes even in AMR which do represent kind of one concept. So we just counted about 800 such concepts in the data. So like 2/3 of the nodes were real concepts, and out of those, there were 25% of different substructures in the data. Then we looked at these differences and said, and what if we disregard differences which are really local, so which means that they could be probably easily learned by any machine learning type, right? The multi-word expressions, 2 nodes going to 1. That's not difficult. Even if you have to decide how to put the dependence, whether on which node from the multi-word expression should be the head of which dependent, it's still sort of learnable. So we found that like half of those different graphs were sort of local differences only, right? Which hopefully could be learned more easily. There was again about less than 1/3 differences in the labeling, but this is just for completeness. Labeling should be easy to learn. But there were also some differences in the reference. But the reference, of course, was not done, so we just hypothesized what would be the grounding of these nodes and found just a few differences. Not very much. It was related to the Virginia organizations, because this was about Virginia highways. And, of course, in some cases, this was translated slightly differently and was also grounded differently. Now, this might not look very good, but if we kind of look at the sentences where we had these local differences only, we found that 18 more sentences can be considered, very similar, except for the local differences. So from that point of view, we can say that almost half of the sentences, after unifying the local differences, would be the same between the two languages. So it's very hard to say whether this is good or bad, if it's half of it, right? But to me, it seems it's actually pretty good, because this is like the first time it was applied to Czech, and we might have errors in the data, and there could be whatever. So we will see how that works. We will try to compute. I don't know whether this is already done. We will try to compute the SMETCH score on those 100 sentences and see what that number says, and just try to start from there to look at whether anything can be changed in how we interpret the annotation guidelines and so on to bring it even closer. So that's all. Thank you for your attention. And if there are any questions, I will be happy to answer. Lemmatizer? Rematizer. Those are things like already, especially, which typically influence more phrases which follow that rematizer than just one. These are things which are hard to attach to a node or a subtree, because they often are. The scope of the rematizer is typically more, or could be more, like subtrees which have some head up there, but it does not apply to the head, but only applies to that. And negation is similar. If you say, I didn't go to my grandmother because of rain, you have to say, you know, where what the scope is. So that was our way of doing that. So instead of just having an attribute on a node, which could only apply either to the node or the subtree, we decided to have a separate node and say anything which is, you know, to the right of it will be the scope. And we are free to rearrange nodes because the word order, there is none at the decorative medical layer. Yes? No, but that would be similar. But for quantifiers, that would not match the topic focus distinction and the order. So that would need kind of another layer or some other way of doing that, right? I mean, even the rematizers, sometimes it's really hard to do it cleanly. So maybe a bit attribute for each node should be, you know, and then some, but that would be complicated to do. So for rematizers, most cases, a negation, in most cases, that can be done. For quantifiers, that would be more difficult.
Thank you, that was really interesting. So if I understood you correctly, then many of the differences between the Czech and English AMRs that you can't get rid of come from the fact that you're actually labeling the nodes in the AMRs with words from those languages, right? And so you said, you know, sometimes the verb is just not available in Czech, right? So it's, you know, it seems to me that makes, you know, these meaning representations not really very abstract, right? If they're still language specific, I mean, do you have any thoughts on this? You know, is it like, is there any chance that one could use the same label set, you know, that, like label the nodes of AMRs in different languages with the same set of
I don't know whether
concepts, let's say.
This is a question to Kevin, I guess. I don't think it's actually possible. I mean, it's possible in, you know, 90%, 95% maybe, if we really try hard, 96%, but we will probably never be able to do that. I mean, if you look even at professional translations and you start annotating them, and it, you know, it's whether it's tectogrammatical or AMRs, you suddenly, because you have to understand the sentence suddenly, really understand, not the way that when you just read it, but actually more. And then you discover that the translation is very often strange. It deletes some information, it adds information which you don't think was really there. Sometimes it does it correctly because it's clear, but very often it's not. So I cannot imagine that someone would really come up with all the possible notions that are in the world and you will be able to do that. I mean, we have to try, but yeah, I mean, I'm sure if I create a Czech verb, or not really verb, but kind of the type of the event, what means auditing, right? Which means, you know, the process of auditing something, you know, yeah, people would understand it if they can find it in the set of possible events, but that would have to be done for many things. And So I think it's right to say this is not an interlingua. That's one of the slogans of AMRs, and it would be very hard to do it. Even though we would love it, right? Because, you know, translation would be suddenly zero, right?
I mean, you still have to map right from those English concepts to Czech words, right?
Well,
so
no,
it would not make translation trivial.
No, but I understood that you mean there will be concepts which can be mapped to both languages in, you know, well, and then of course we would have just one, right? But I don't think that's really possible. Actually, I must admit that when we started this whole thing, like trying to, you know, annotate morphology and syntax and meaning, then I thought that we will get better agreement on the meaning than we are getting on morphology. Because morphology is very artificial. I mean, what is the case? I thought it would be very hard to explain to people, and the people would be, you know, confusing things and so on. And syntax, the same thing. But actually, it's exactly the opposite. They cannot agree on the meaning, but they could learn sort of easily, you know, what cases are and degree of comparison, all these things, even though it's very formal. So I think that when we go from the tectogrammatical to AMRs, that will be even worse. And it sort of was. I mean, we made lots of errors. Also, we didn't have a good tool for that. We just did it, you know, by brackets. But even if we had a good tool like we had for the decorative metric annotation, I still think that people will simply disagree what it means. What it exactly means. I mean, you know, what is kind of the, you know, the presupposition of that? You know, should we add it? Should we? How that will be difficult.
So I think it's really interesting that you're indicating the information structure. And I guess I probably have a lot of questions, but I was just wondering on the empirical side, so how, this big question is sort of how you found the match between Czech and English. Were you able to reconstruct as much information structure as in English?
We have it done for Czech for the product dependency tree bank, but we haven't really done it on the parallel tree bank. So we have done some small parts because, of course, it's related to the discourse annotation that we are now doing on both Czech and English, and we have done some samples on that side. But it appears that we will have to maybe even revisit some of the rules of the annotation because in many cases it's sort of clear, but in many cases it's not so clear. So for Czech, we had some like empirical rules, which were almost like, you know, like rules for the computer to do this, which I think should not be there. And then people should really have a different definition of what topic and focus is and just try to do it from that side, and then we should derive the rules. But it was difficult to do, just to finish the annotation on the Czech side. So yes, of course, it's not easy, and especially in English, I think we will have trouble because the word order will not help us, as it did in Czech. There is more to it. We have not only two labels, actually we have a third label, which is a contrastive topic, and some other, you know, details which we can talk about, but yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So I'm interested in this comment you made, that said people don't agree with meaning.
People don't?
Don't agree about the meaning.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm wondering, it seems crazy to me, but maybe the disagreements in the meaning are in fact an important part of what it means, what the structure is. And it's in fact the disagreements that tell you what the essence of the sentence is. So, is there any attempt to capture the disagreement?
One of my suggestions, but of course this would, maybe if I get some, you know, big funding for that, but was actually let people annotate and keep all the annotations together. But of course in large enough numbers so that we can really get some statistics out of it. So doing two people, you know, okay, it's okay, you know, you can compute the number, but you would need 50 people annotate the same sentence to see, you know, to filter out the real errors and not reading the guidelines properly, and then you would get a real disagreement on the meaning, and that would be interesting, but that's really difficult to do. I mean, when we try to classify the annotation errors, they come from all sorts of things, but... I mean, if you think about, I mean, I try to think about this quite a lot. So very often, in fact, the sentence, you know, we have a sentence with 25 words, and in fact, the meaning is yes. And very often, the meaning is zero. There is a joke about this, but I don't, you know, in fact, you would like to annotate just yes. Right, because that's all it says, except it says it, you know, in nice words and kind of, you know, gives some maybe some uncertainty information about this yes, you know, within the sentence, confirms because it's a communication, confirms that you understand the question and so on. But most of it is yes. I mean, if you read the newspaper article, what you remember afterwards, you know, Germany won over Brazil 7-1. But there was an article like that, right? And So I don't know what we should done on that. I mean, this is all intermediate anyway, I think, right? Because when imagine you want to generate the article. You know, you see it on TV and you want to write an article about it. You know how to install your software, right? You know what the steps should be, what you should check, what are the branches, you know, if it, something doesn't, you know, happen and so on. And then you want to generate the article. So it's just a few facts which you want to write by text. And this is the meaning, right? You describe the process. So when you go the other way, should you just do it that way, or should you really be as detailed as we are? Even, you know, even the AMRs are actually very detailed.
I think there's a similar question in translation.
Yeah, well. But apparently in translation, you can get away in most cases by translating, most of it at the word level, some of it at the syntax level, a little bit on the semantic level, and maybe then, something will still remain for like perfect translation. We are still far from perfect translation. I have a favorite example for translation where you would really have to go as far as I said, not to yes, but to something, maybe slightly more complicated. When we started experiments with translation, we got the first parallel text we had was Reader's Digest stories. So they in the early 90s, Reader's Digest came and they started producing this little, story, like a journal or not, anyway, so these little books with Czech stories. And they thought that they hired the best translators here, like people who translate books and poems and so on. So these people did a really good job. It's also very expensive to get this book. And then we got this data. And we went through the data and we said, but this is impossible to do because, the translation is so different. And my favorite example is that there was a story and the situation was there was a church on a hill and the plumbing got wrong. So they had a spill off and the priest called a repairman, a plumber, to repair it. So that was the situation. And then in one language, it went on saying, and the priest waited in vain. Simply the plumber forget about it or something. And the other language said, the plumber didn't make it to the hill. So there was not even a single word which was shared by the translations. But if you read it through, I mean, you understood perfectly what happened, right? That was simply that the plumber didn't get to do what he was supposed to do, and then it continued, by standard literate translation. So for this type of translation, you would really need to have some, structure which I think goes beyond AMR, just the facts, right? And then generate the two languages completely separately. But of course, this was a story, so for stories, this is easier to do. For philosophical articles, that would be really, really hard. But certainly at the paragraph level, it could be even worse. Like you can write two different paragraphs saying yes, and that would be completely different, right? Yeah.
The notion of quantifiers was notion of quantifiers was mentioned before. Do you have a technical representation or something for quantifiers?
No. For quantifiers, we just have a node which simply normalizes the quantifiers. What we have done though, it's for words like some, everybody, something, anything, and so on. We have sort of created a scheme, a classification scheme, where we try to at least normalize these words to lemmas, which would maybe not really directly be related, formally to the form that was used, but which have some attributes to help us. But kind of structurally, it is attached as a node to whatever it sort of modifies. So if you have every man, drinks beer, then every will be simply a modifier on man. And it won't, say exactly,
Scope.
Yeah, the scope, yeah.
Yeah.
No, we thought about it, but it was apparently more difficult than the remitizers and the negation.
It seems that we would end up with some kind of predicate logic of
some. Yeah, but yeah. So we actually had, about this, there was a whole PhD thesis about just these words. So if you are interested, I don't know, it is in Czech, Magda, was it in Czech or is it English? Okay, well, anyway, so. But there are papers about it, yeah. So just remind me when I can point you. Okay? Okay, thank you.